how you can learn what your customers think, how they think, and mostly, most importantly, why they think what they do. It's really hard when I transitioned from radio over into retail. I dealt with a lot of people who had been in the business for a long time. And no matter what business you're in, it can be really hard to separate yourself from your business and think about things from a customer's perspective. So seeing how people are reacting to what you're putting out there in real time is very, very beneficial to help you learn to see things through the eyes of your customers.
Yeah, and it's really helpful too just to keep an eye on what your customers are posting on their channels and what really matters to them. So this is just a quick example of some themes that we saw in our daily monitoring of all of our customers that mentioned us. And as you can see, our customers really like talking about their hat collections and showing those off. So we took that learning, and I think we did a really cool kind of collaborative campaign that came out of it.
Yeah, we found a topic that was relevant, that was real, and that really spoke to our customers. What we did was we noticed there was kind of a subculture of people who followed us that were very, like, beyond passionate about hats, to where they had thousands in their closets. One guy even took all of his hats, spelled out, you know, different phrases to us and would tweet them out there. So we decided to harness this passion and build a contest where we had people submit their hat collections and then had people vote on it. So we got engagement, we showcased the love of our product, and we did it all completely organic.
Yep. So we got over 1,200 photos attributed to that hashtag. And the really cool thing that we noticed from the content that we then shared on our own channels was that the content that we were sharing from these people who were participating in the Ultimate Hat Collection had way higher engagement than our own content that we were putting out ourselves. So it just goes to show that organic play is even a lot more measurable from an engagement level when you're using content that is highly relevant to your audience because they're the ones that made it. So, oh boy, here we go, guys, here we go. We're gonna take a turn into the darker part of the internet, and I'm not talking the dark web. I'm talking about what happens when there's just negative social commentary about your brand, because it happens all the time. We heard Walmart talking this morning about their crisis communication plan, and that is super important. I really loved that presentation, and anybody that wasn't able to get it should definitely listen to that audio. But what I'd like to talk about today is something that's on a little bit of a smaller scale. So maybe there's not a celebrity that's tweeting negatively about your brand, but I guarantee you there are people on a daily basis that have had some sort of negative interaction, because as a social media team, we have no control over how everyone's in-store interactions go, or their online experience, or their shipping experience. So if something goes badly along the way, and someone chooses to voice their displeasure on social media, that's something that we need to be in tune with and have a plan and a way to respond to that, because every, what we might consider sort of small potatoes, is a crisis to those people because they've chosen to take that step to post that on social. So, here's a little audience interaction for you guys. Who wants to fill in this blank for me? Anybody? I'll give you a hat.
Perfect.
Who said that? Hat for you. A hat for you. Thank you. Cubs?
It's very Oprah-esque.
Yes. You get a hat. That's just my life dream.
We'll get to you
We'll get you a Cubs hat. Yeah, she's absolutely right. Every troll can be an opportunity. And before we get too far into this, I do want to distinguish the difference in the types of trolls that we see today. I'll use a bit of a baseball metaphor. There are your major league trolls. These are the people that it's kind of like their daily job just to go in and stir up negativity, to stir the pot. They're not contributing to anything positive, and they might not even give a crap about your brand. They're just there to be negative. If you're able to distinguish from those people, and it's really probably a small portion, try to hone in on those minor league, what you may consider trolls, but actually just might be disgruntled customers that you have an opportunity to change their perspective through a little bit of one-on-one interaction. So there's a few ways that you can continue to edge in your value through your social channels by understanding with and interacting your customers. So we've got a few tactics up here that I think are really key. And my number one takeaway before we even get into the tactics is that these people, these minor league maybe trolls, are not to be ignored. Because if they're ignored, then there's a chance that that might escalate and just continue to have a negative impact on your brand.
Yeah, one of the kind of equivalents that I put is, like, think back to Smokey the Bear, how one tiny little match, you know, left just smoldering, can burn down an entire forest.
Yeah.
One, you know, kind of innocuous tweet that sits out there can pick up steam, go viral, and all of a sudden it becomes a one-off tweet becomes a major crisis for a brand.
So really attacking every single one of these negative interactions has been part of our process for this past year. And these are the tactics that we go through. The first is practicing relentless empathy, because at the end of the day, these people really just want to be heard. So using language like, I hear you, I understand you, how can I help you? Will really be a good first step in the direction of changing the context of the conversation. Second is to be honest. Again, that was mentioned this morning. You're not gonna earn anything by trying to pull the wool over someone's eyes, so keep it short and sweet, but be honest with your customers. And also, this is one that's quite popular right now, but doing a little bit of bantering, doing a little bit of jabbing here and there, all in good fun, that can be a way that you are able to turn something that could be negative into a little bit more of a positive spin. But this, I like to put a little bit of an asterisk up there, because this is not something that's gonna fit into everybody's brand voice. Everybody wants to be Wendy's, and not everybody can be, and not everybody should be. And trying to respond in a way that's gonna get you to go viral and land on top of some BuzzFeed article for your savage tweet is not a good strategy. In fact, that's a good way to probably end up, have your brand end up in hot water more often than not.
Yeah, if you're a food company and somebody says, I got food poisoning off your food, and you write back, well, you ordered the wrong thing, not the best way to go.
Yeah, no, that's not good. Save those jokes for stand-up comedy night. Do an improv class. Yeah. And then the fourth, and I think most important key, is to include your customer service team into your social channels. So we've given our customer service team at Lids a seat in our tool, and we have an escalation path where if someone has a question or a negative experience that goes a little bit further than our knowledge, because I don't know your order number, I don't know what's going on with the shipping department, I'm just the social media team, then you can communicate that to the customer. You can say, hey, I think this is something that our customer service team would be able to handle. We're going to escalate you to those guys from where you're at right now on social, and they'll be able to take care of you from here. So that not only buys your customer service team a little bit of time, but it also allows the customer to know that you're taking them seriously. These are just a couple of examples of ways that we were able to use these tactics to interact with customers. One of the most common things that we hear on social media in our comments and our replies are, hey, I was at your store and I didn't see the hat that I wanted for my team that I love so much. And a lot of times that reason is because you're in Southern California and your favorite team is the Nashville Predators. We're not gonna have a solution for you there because we can only stock so many hats in a store. So by responding with a sort of like positive and lighthearted way, we were able to spin that sort of negative response into a positive. And we actually had a really great learning out of the fact that we got this response so much on social.
Yeah, a lot of how you handle anything is a lot like how a stand-up comedian would deal with a heckler in the audience, or how a therapist, is like, I hear you. But a big part of it is understanding your audience. And I think that kind of plays into this next example.
Yeah, exactly. And so one thing that we hear a ton, and I'm sure everybody here has gotten this comment, this is so stupid, this is so lame, this is so insert expletive here. You could leave those unchecked. You probably would be fine. But we've decided that we're gonna take a little bit of a stand. We're gonna stand and say, you know what? No, we're not gonna just let that negative energy sit out in social media. There's enough of that these days. We're gonna try to see if we can spin this in a positive direction. So for this customer, he was commenting on, I believe it was a stain repellent product that we sell at Lids, and we just let him know, hey, this is the way this product works. People use it to protect their investment of their hat. Hopefully you try it. And he responded with, yeah, maybe I'll have to give that a try. So obviously not every single situation will end up that way, but one can only hope.
Then there are ones that are a little bit more high profile, like this one. And we've referenced stand-up comedy a few times, and this is one of our biggest wins in turning back a troll, not so much. Who here has heard of Jim Gaffigan, stand-up comedian?
Yeah.
One of the most popular comedians right now. His major topic of comedy is food. Yeah, good answer. I thought I heard somebody say that. That does not win you a hat. So he wrote a joke like he typically does on Twitter, and it was kind of bashing Lids. We first saw, oh, Jim Gaffigan mentioned us. And then we read the comment. We were like, Jim Gaffigan mentioned us. So having dealt with stand-up comedians before, I know there's two things they respond to. One is comedy. The other one is free stuff. So we thought, all right, we'll take a two-pronged approach here. We immediately wrote him back saying, Jim, we love jokes about food, but do you really need five albums worth? So he took that, lighthearted, wrote back touche, and then we kept the conversation going, and said, you know, can we make up? Can we be friends? Can we offer you some free customized hats? This turned into a huge win for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was one of my favorite moments working in social media, because after this interaction, I literally slid into Jim Gaffigan's DMs. And it was really great. We coordinated with him, and we sent him and his family and his wife a bunch of custom hats. And then a week later, we got a really nice customized message from him that we did not ask for. It wasn't like in the box, hey, tag us. Yeah, it was a video, and it was really sweet. He was kind of, I think he had just woken up and opened the package, and he was just like, I love lids. You should go to lids. And that's pretty much the whole video. But it was really sweet and just a really great example of how you can turn pretty much any conversation around if you kind of put the effort into it.
You sliding into Jim's DMs should be like your factoid whenever you get
I know, speak. Actually, we should have led with that. Yeah. That's what we should have led with. So yeah, sometimes the winning moments that you get are just kind of, they fall into your lap, like with Jim Gaffigan. Other times you need to engineer those, you need to find them. For lids, the way that we've approached this is that we've looked at all of the times that we can be most relevant. For us, that's during sporting moments. So lids will staff a team member, either from the lids team or from the radius team, to be online during all of these key moments so that we're able to participate in conversation as they happen in real time and as they spike. So that will be, you know, for the World Series, for the NBA draft, for the NFL draft. I think we've got someone online tomorrow night who's going to be live tweeting during that. And I would challenge you guys, think about for your brand, what are the key moments that you may have missed in the past month and in the past year? And what are the steps that you can take to start to anticipate those moments and start to be ready for them and have a plan for how you're going to approach them? Does that mean having some sort of listening tool so that you can get a notification when relevant conversations start to spike? Does that mean you need to have a team member online more often? There are ways and resources where you can start to capture those key moments. All right, myth number two. This is something that many organizations struggle with. You can be large, you can be small, huge budget, small budget. I've heard this so many times. What it really comes down to is social media is a content forward channel. Everyone's heard content is king, we know that. But when it comes to how you're going to get that content, there are some times where your leadership is like, yeah, what if we just pulled that from one of our other channels? What if we just pulled that from our in-store display creative? And that really doesn't always work. And that's because people consume content for different channels in very different ways. And it's about putting yourself in the shoe of your consumer so that you can understand how they're going to consume that content.
Yeah, you wouldn't, as a TV commercial, just spend 30 seconds with the camera focused on your mailer. So it's the same with Facebook and Twitter and any other social channel. You have to craft the content to fit the way people consume the information on those channels.
So here's an example of a piece of content that we received. Let's see if we can play this. And we'll talk a little bit about how we use that content to build for more of our channels. Oh no. Yeah, but just imagine like there's some like really sick beat going on in the background. Like.
And I believe some VO.
Yeah, there's a nice VO. This video that we got, we received from New Era, which is a partner of Lids. And they did a really good job, I think, of creating what we would consider a hero video, some strong content that we can then use to build creative off of it.
And so kind of like just to use this as an example while we're queuing it up,
yeah.
Is we were delivered different versions of this. We were delivered vertical versions for different channels. We were delivered some with subtitles, some without. So if you're posting on a channel like YouTube where 90% of the audience listens with the sound on, you don't have to run the subtitles.
Yep.
If you're doing it on Twitter or on Facebook where 90% listens with the sound off, then the subtitle one was the way to go. So again, it's knowing your audience, knowing what version of content to run so it can be most easily consumed. We built the anticipation into this presentation.
I know. It is a really cool video.
Your notes actually said, hold for 5 minutes while we cue video.
I know. We anticipated this. Everything is fine.
So, Chicago sports fans.
All right.
Favorite league. I want to see if it matches up with the data we've got. So, who likes NFL best? Wow.
Sounds
is that true, or are you just afraid to admit it in the current climate? All right. What about MLB? Whose favorite is baseball?
Okay.
Hockey playoffs are going on. Any hockey fans? And NBA? Other than the football thing, that pretty much matches up.
What about soccer?
Oh, yeah, soccer. We don't have that in Indy.
We don't have that hat, sorry.
We don't have Major League in Indy. So just know, we have a lot of Chicago teams up here. So when we get to the Q&A section.
Oh, here it is. Thank you so much. Oh.
Sabotage.
You ready? Everybody wants to be king. But what happens when that seat heats up and the whole kingdom is suddenly on your shoulders? You see, it's not all glory and gold, rings and trophies. It's moving mountains in a concrete jungle. It's the type of weight that can make mere mortals crumble. Yeah, they'll try to overthrow you. Say, charge it to the game. Nah, this crown represents something greater than your name. It's your city, it's your family, your empire. Trust me, I'm not here to deter you, just to tell you. Only fools rule from the top. Real kings, we lead from the ground. So the question I pose to you, young king, are you ready to wear this crown?
So yeah, what do you do when a really cool piece of content like that lands in your lap? You could probably pull a still from it and run it across all of your channels, or you could do what we like to call atomizing content, and that's taking content and really specifying it and custom creating it for each of the channels and the ways that it's consumed on that channel. So you've got your Instagram campaigns and your Snapchat videos, and then you also need to think about how you're going to utilize this content to show up in your advertising. And it's, you know, this is not just for social media. You're also looking at your email, your app, and your wireframe, and your display banners, and just the ways that you can really, again, put yourself in your customer's shoes, think about how they're trying to, how they would most like to receive that content, and then build out the content with that in mind. And I think at Lids, they call this the 360 campaign, right?
Yeah, so we'll have one campaign, but it reaches 360 across all of our different channels. So it's not just one piece of content everywhere. It's how can we look at each channel individually, 360 across the entire campaign?
Yeah, and this is, I think, a really good way to summarize it. And I want everyone to, I'm going to pretend like I'm a teacher, repeat after me. Omnichannel does not mean copy and paste. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much. I was really afraid no one was going to do that. But it's really true. Because at the end of the day, we're, like Matt said, we're going into people's news feeds. We're going into their scrolling time. And if they are so lucky with today's algorithm to be part of the 1% that sees your organic content, then we don't want to be a distraction. We want to be something that makes sense and is a seamless part of their flow and is hopefully going to inspire them to take the action that you want them to take with your content, whether it is viewing your video or clicking on a link to shop. So we can talk about content until we're blue in the face. But at the end of the day, you need to have a social budget to run those paid distribution campaigns that achieve the business objectives that you need to prove the ROI. Everyone knows that social is a pay-to-play game now, so you need to have some sort of structure to your paid distribution strategy in order to have those results that can then change the hearts and minds of the people that make budget decisions, so that all rolls back to you with hopefully bigger budgets, more seats at the table like we've talked about. So here's the slide that everyone was expecting to see in a presentation probably at some point today. It's a sales funnel, and it's probably very familiar to many of you, but this is just what we at Radius like to use as a structure to our paid distribution strategy, because it really does sort of help outline the way that you allocate your budget and the way that you utilize the different values that each different level of the conversion funnel has. So we'll start with awareness.
Awareness, my personal favorite of all the parts of the funnel, because that's where you get to do all the fun stuff. That's where you're drawing people in that haven't already learned about your brand. So that's when you get to kind of step outside the box and do things like videos or fun Twitter handles or anything like that. But one of the biggest keys to any awareness play right now is knowing how to amplify that message once you get it out there. And we've kind of broken this out into a couple different methods that we use. Who remembers old infomercials on TV where they used to tell you, if you buy this sharp knife, if you buy this new handheld blender, we'll give you another one so you can tell a friend, and then they can tell a friend. It's all about word of mouth. And the reason that worked was because word of mouth is more powerful than anything a brand can put out there. And the new word of mouth in the social media age is the influencer. A lot of young people, a lot of millennials, which is a buzzword I always hate to use, and I told myself I wasn't going to use it, but a lot of millennials will believe something coming from an influencer or somebody they already follow on social than they will coming from a brand. Yep. So it's important to harness the power of utilizing somebody for their social following, or even like we did with the Ultimate Hat Collector, people who are already passionate about your brand, and whether you're paying them to do it, whether you're giving them product, whether you're just kind of tying into their own ego and vanity and, you know, amplifying things that they're already posting, tie into that so that they can spread your message to their followers in their own unique voice.
Yeah, by simply incentivizing people, you don't have to incentivize via payment. You can incentivize via placement. Say, we're gonna do a repost of our favorite fan photo of the week, or maybe give them a placement in your email or even in your website. And we'll start going through these a little bit quicker, but contesting and lead generation is another one that we've been really successful with. Lead generation, also a very important top of funnel initiative. And the Facebook lead gen ads, if you're not using them, they're a really great way to get some of those CRM data information. And if tied to a contest, it just incentivizes the user a lot more because you never have to leave the channel. And you can just take that data and pass it right along to your email team. Obviously, no further than that. Data privacy is a very important issue.
And don't think about contesting as you have to give away a big prize. Sometimes the smallest prizes are the ones that work the best. We've given away a one-off hat that just looked really cool, put it in a trophy case, and we got thousands of likes and shares out of it. Mm-hmm. So don't think it has to be big picture. Just do stuff that you think can work for your audience and work for your budget.
Yep. Yeah, and obviously follower growth, given the algorithms that are happening today, is not as meaningful as it used to be. But for Lids, it's just really important because they are a socially driven company and they would like to have the audiences that match that. So this was our big goal for last year, to reach 1 million followers. And we did that and then some, achieving more than 71% growth across all channels for the year.
And then event activation. I have to give Radius credit for finding this opportunity for us. It was a company called Luster that does these mosaics at live events. And we were able to show that social activation doesn't have to just happen on social.
Yep.
We were able to be at an event, NCAA Final Four. People were able to come up, take a photo, tag us in their photo, and it printed out onto this huge mosaic. So not only did we get a bunch of earned media from the press that covered it, we got social content, we got social activation, we got a ton of engagement. Luster.
Should have told them we were going to give them a shout out today. They're going to love that.
Yes, use promo code LIDS and Radius.
And then finally, branding videos. I know we've already shown an example today, and I don't think we're going to have time to show this full video, but this was one that we ran during the holidays, and it had a really, really sweet message to it that was all about paying it forward, and it really had kind of no promotional tie to it. It was truly just about holiday and being of the giving spirit. Yeah, maybe at the end, during question time, perhaps. So I'll talk a little bit about how we use that video and to continue to bring people through the funnel, because that's one thing that's really great about social media is that it doesn't just end at each stage of the funnel. There are tools and ways that you can use each layer of them to continue to pull people through. And at the conversion level, obviously, our KPIs are looking at getting people on your landing pages, what your conversion rate is and your returns. So thinking about that really sweet holiday video that we were going to show you guys, a way that we are able to build audiences from that video, you can build an audience of viewers, of people who have maybe viewed that video 50% or more. So these are people that clearly engaged with this particular piece of content. And then overlap that with people who shopped on lids.com specifically for Dodgers gear. We now have a very, very specific audience that we can target with perhaps that video again. And instead of just being a video ad, it's now shared alongside of a collection of Dodgers product with a call to action to shop now. So obviously then we're reaching a consumer that is much more likely to hopefully engage and then convert because they've already shown that A, they're interested in Dodgers because they've shopped, and B, they're interested in this particular piece of content. So it's a lot more of a seamless flow to get them to the end result that we want to get to them.
Don't take any notes, and we'll delete that from the video. It's easier to push them down the funnel in a more natural way.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, our goal here is to create experiences that provide value to our customers. Again, we're not trying to be intrusive. We're not trying to ruin anybody's day. We want people to want more of what we have to offer. So that is really tied to avoiding some of the more traditional spray and pray tactics that have been used in the past. And that's just purely targeting based on interest categories or purely targeting based on demographics. Tools like Facebook and others allow you to build custom audiences that are specific to your brand. So you can do that through social actions like the video views. You can harness your CPM data and all the different segments that you have with your email list. Again, website traffic is another way that you can create custom audiences, as well as app activity. And the really beautiful thing about Facebook and other tools now is that even if you have a very small list, let's say you have 25 people in your email list, you're able to build a lookalike audience through that Facebook will look at those 25 folks, say, what is similar about all of them? What attributes do they have? What behaviors do they take? And extrapolate that data across all of the United States, looking for people who are similar to those folks. And now all of a sudden you have a lookalike audience of more than 1 million people. So continuing to go down the funnel, retargeting is where you really want to be efficient with your budget to only focus on those who are most likely to convert. And there's one very, very magical tool that is necessary for this. It's called the Facebook Pixel. So anybody that does not have one implemented should absolutely do it right now. Go home, talk to your IT team, and figure out a way to get that implemented, because it is key not only to doing the custom audience builds that we talked about earlier, but it is also key to finding those people who might have lost their way on the customer journey, and then remarketing to them, retargeting them with very specific messaging that is going to make them highly likely to convert. Here's a little visual for you guys, very helpful. Imagine this is the audience. So find me the person that is going to convert based on a specific piece of product. It's really impossible. So by harnessing the Facebook Pixel and through a very specific ad type called dynamic product ads, which matches the Facebook Pixel with your product catalog, Facebook will allow you to find that person, remarket them with the specific product that they may have been looking at online. Everyone's been followed around by that pair of shoes on the internet, that pair of pants, and they follow you until you buy it. And they do that because it works. Because we all get distracted by shiny things. People abandon their cart all the time. And so by continually remarketing these people with dynamic product that makes sense to them, you're highly likely to convert and find these little Waldos, if you will.
I have 3 Survivor buffs at home because they wouldn't stop advertising them to me. I finally just gave in.
So yeah, and there's Waldo, by the way. He's peeking his head out for you guys. So yeah, we've talked a lot about proving ROI on social media today, and I wanted to just share / brag on Lids a little bit on some of the ROI that we've been able to achieve on every single level of this funnel. Starting with your awareness ads and getting the most eyeballs that you can. But I think the one that was the most impactful from our start of our relationship to now is that by using the Facebook Pixel and by using custom audiences, we were able to increase their conversion revenue by more than 2,000% year over year. And now in 2018, we're on track to pass that last year's revenue number by the end of Q2. And now that's more due to the fact that we've increased our budget. Every time that we're proving ourselves and every time that we're showing that ROI, we're continuing to get more and more budget, which is allowing us to just run more killer campaigns. And it just sort of is like a snowball effect in the best way possible. And then finally, a $3.12 return on ad spend, specifically with last touch attribution for our dynamic retargeting ads. And you can see that, like I said, last touch attribution. Attribution modeling is a whole other presentation. So anybody that wants to nerd about that with me afterwards, let me get you a drink, because that is a fun conversation. So who's ready to be a Mythbuster?
Yeah, you can prove to your company that there is value in social and there is measurable ROI. The big things are, provide your audience with value first. Give them a reason to follow you. Then create remarkable, relevant content. I mean, as Sarah has said, and pretty much probably everybody in here at one time has said to their bosses, it's all about content. Content's king. But once you have that content, it's about how you use it and where you use it. And then when it comes to your paid efforts, structure your campaigns using the funnel through the sales journey from start to finish. I mean, it's all about leading them from awareness. Once you hook them, get them to buy something.
Yep, absolutely. So yeah, at the end of the day, it's outlined here. The customer journey starts way before you're paid, and it ends kind of right back where it started. So it's all about just like hitting those key moments along the customer journey, and again, continuing to provide value to your customers. So I think we have time for questions. A couple? Let's do a couple.
I saw you guys put up some big numbers there in terms
yes.
of the return, but how do you guys understand how each of the different parts of your social media, so there's the Jim Gaffigan interaction, there's customized creative, how do you understand how the different parts are stacking up to that ROI and how they're contributing to that overall performance success?
There's a lot of test and learn that's involved in that. And being very transparent when you are doing that test and learn. So if we're testing, for example, one piece of content compared to another, really being transparent with how each piece of content performs and what the returns are, whether it's monetary or whether it's traffic, just being able to do that comparison. I hope that answers, yeah.
The young Cavs fan, Cedric the Entertainer, that slide. So what about usage rights and photos?
Yeah, that's a great question. It kind of depends on a case-by-case basis, but what we do typically is just a kind of a manual effort of saying, hey, we really like this. Do you mind if we repost it on our channel? Because it's been such a manual effort, we're kind of looking into some tools right now that I think are helpful in that capacity.
And one thing you also need to keep in mind is how litigious is the person that you're using their photos? Like, you're not going to go and just grab some of Jay-Z's and run that, because
sure.
by the time you hit send, you're getting a cease and desist letter from his team. So when it's UGC, it's very easy to just reach out to them, usually on channel, just get their written permission to use it. If it's coming from a service or it's coming from a celebrity, it probably needs a little bit more thorough, but then it also depends on how willing your company is to take that risk in posting content, whether engagement is, you know, outweighs possible litigation.
Yep.
Hi. Hi. You spoke a lot about how content is king,
yes.
and it's very important. So I'm just wondering what Lids does to get that content. Do you have a content curation tool? Do you rely on user-generated content?
It's pretty multi-pronged. So we have an in-house team that does creative. We do some internal videos. We do internal banner ads and internal photography. We also have partners like Radius that will help us come up with strategic content, or we'll always be on our social channels looking for those UGC opportunities, looking for opportunities like the Jim Gaffigan tweets. And then we've also got production partners. So we've got some video agencies that we use. We've teamed up with some other agencies to farm out some photography and stuff like that. So it really is about coming up with what content you want and then figuring out the best way to create it.
Yeah, and a lot of that is cost resources. That's time and that's money. So that's another way, like if you're going after more budget, you can say, hey, here's a test and learn opportunity that we had with some content. This performed better than that. Why don't we go after and we maybe partner with a production house to create more of the content that does perform better, because we've already proven the ROI of that particular type of content.
And as some other speakers have said, when it comes to content, it doesn't have to be super polished or slick like the new era videos that you showed. Sometimes just simple things that have been shot with the phone. It depends on what your brand is and what your audience wants to consume. So like with contesting, don't worry about the budget. Just think about what kind of content will my audience like and how can I most cost afford to make it.
So you just mentioned contests. So I'm curious, how often do you guys do contests? Are they very localized? What's kind of your range for
that? We do a number of different types of contests. So we have some that run regional specific. We have others that are like longer form, 2-week contests. And then we have some that just take place one day. And we could be running 2 different contests on 2 different channels. But we try to do big contests. We don't like to overlap.
Yeah.
And we try to space them out to give them a little breathing room. Daily contests, they could happen that morning. We just decide, hey, we've got this cool hat here, or we want to give away a gift card to promote this. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So we're out of time. I noticed there was a couple people over here that had questions, so maybe if you want to sort of move this way afterwards and just help them out a little bit too. But let's hear for them. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.